Live from Burbank, California, the place to go for delicious recipe ideas. It's the Mark Maron Show. And now, he kills hitchhikers. Mark Maron!
That's it? I kill hitchhikers?
Yeah, but it's juxtaposed with delicious recipe ideas.
Hey, at least I give him a ride. It's 6 past the hour. Good evening. Geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. Good evening to our Chicano listeners. I want to make sure I say Chicano. I was called out. That Latino refers to not necessarily Mexican Americans who are Chicano, and I grew up with Chicanos, Jim. I grew up in Albuquerque, New Mexico, my friend. I grew up with Chicanos. My father is married to a Chicano woman. I have an extended family of Chicanos that, and I should not be saying
Chicanos?
Latinos necessarily or Mexican Americans. Chicanos. That's what George Lopez calls himself. So I think it's probably the right way to go. You have George Lopez. If George 100 episodes Lopez calls himself a Chicano, that's the way it's supposed to be said. Chicano, my friend.
Really? Because I just read like you know a 3-page article in a national magazine about how it's Latino. Instead.
Latino, I think, is broad-reaching and is specific to people that may not be necessarily from Mexico or may be not second-generation Mexican-American. Chicano is what I grew up with, and I was told by somebody that was Chicano. If you want to argue with me on this or tell me – not argue. There's no argument. I just wanted to say the right thing. I don't want to offend people. 877-520-1150. If I need to be taught a lesson here, I'm willing to make the lesson be taught to me or enable it to be taught to me. What, Jim?
I think the point is the whole thing is very confusing, just like the immigration issue is extremely confusing.
I guess it is confusing because it is ongoing, and I'll be honest with you. I believe wholeheartedly. Some people have said on the blog and elsewhere that the Republicans are using this to distract us from bigger heinous crimes that the neocon death cult is engaged in. But I believe what the immigration issue is enabling this administration to do, not unlike Bush's recent position on the Iraq War and his steadfastness in shamelessly saying that troops will be there till 2008, not unlike that, what he's doing is he is enabling other Republicans to make their own choices, yet still only align themselves with him on things they agree with him on. See, some Republicans, depending on their constituents, are going to say, we got to get rid of all these Mexicans. We got to get rid of all the Chicanos. We got to get rid of all of them. Just send them all home. They shouldn't be here. They're taking jobs away. They're ruining the country. All right. Those people, if those Republicans need to play to people that are equally as jingoistic and racist as they are, they can. Whereas if moderate Republicans want to say, well, I'm going to go along with the proposal here that the bipartisan proposal and President Bush, we need to integrate these people into the current immigration system. We need to provide, 400,000 of these temporary worker permits. So if they need to do that to pander to their constituents, they can. So what this is enabling the Republicans to do is have it both ways. I don't think it's a divide and conquer thing. I think not unlike the Iraq War, where you got about 31% of the idiots in this country will believe the president is doing the right thing no matter what. About 31%. I'm going to get into this a little later. Will believe him. So he is going to stay steadfast and stubborn in his, decision to continue allowing American soldiers to die and continue into allowing hundreds of thousands of Iraqis to be injured and die along with American soldiers, just because those people that are so in denial, so ignorant and so angry as to believe that the president is right no matter what, that is nonetheless, even though this is a guy with 33% approval rating, that is nonetheless 31% of the Republicans. So I'll tell you right now. So they want to enable Republicans to either align themselves with that part of the Bush agenda or not. So I think he's making it easier for Republicans who are trying to pander to independent voters, to the voters they're losing. Thank God they're losing them without completely disengaging from the president. Taking a little of that, a little of what the president has to offer in their own thing. By the way, we sort of jumped the gun here. You are listening to the Mark Maron Show. You can go to markmaron.com, M-A-R-C-M-A-R-O-N, and blog away if you'd like. This is Progressive Talk AM 1150. We do have an amazing show tonight, Jim, but I had to get right off on this thing, right off on it. Yeah. Now we got somebody. Let me tell you who's going to be on the show before I take this call. It's important stuff, and then we're going to get to the short order news and other things. Sarah Silverman, comedian Sarah Silverman, will be here, and I'm sure she has got something to say on the immigration issue. If not, she'll have something to say that's provocative, perhaps dirty, and questionably racist.
Yeah, she is Chicano herself.
She's a Jewish Chicano. That's not true. Yes. She's not. Yeah, I'll tell you one thing. My dad's remarriage at my dad's wedding, what a great, great bit of business that was. I'll explain to you in a minute. Also, tonight, from the Marijuana Policy Project, Francis Della Vecchia is going to be here to explain to us what the policy project is about. It's about decriminalizing marijuana, but about protecting the rights of medical marijuana dispensaries to exist. And also, we have consumer of marijuana product comedian Rick Overton coming with Mr. Della Vecchia. They are having an event this Friday, party.
Well, a happening?
It's a happening. It's a bacchanal. Is that how you say it? Bacchanal?
A bacchanal
at the Playboy Mansion. A fundraising bacchanal for the Marijuana Policy Project. Also, poet Lewis Larkin is going to be here with us. He's up. He just moved to L.A. He's getting some good press, and we are going to continue our poetry festival. Yeah, we've had some poems from you, Jim.
Yes.
We had the cop, and his name eludes me, but he was very good. And now tonight, Lewis Larkin, who I believe is from the South. Let's take this call then. Mike in L.A., can you clear it up for me, Chicano or Latino, and why?
Well, you can't really clear it up, but the word Chicano came from a pretty radical movement back in the 60s.
A radical movement in the 60s.
Yeah, and so, see, the thing is, a lot of people back then, it was politically correct to say Chicano, but a lot of people, like my parents, whose parents were from Mexico, never really liked that word, never really took to that word. And you know, a lot of people, like George Lopez, was one of those guys that grew up back then. And you know, just because he uses that word doesn't mean that, you know, everybody wants to be called as such.
But, so are you saying it's sort of like the kind of African-American black?
Yeah, kind of, you know, like when they started saying black, and you know, and then you know, everybody kind of has to be categorized, kind of thing.
But you're saying Chicano to some newer Latino people represents either part of their history that they are not directly identified with, or they don't want to use that label.
Well, yeah, I mean, because like I say, that if you remember the movement back then, back in the 60s, back in the like the late middle to late 60s, that's where that word came from, and it gave people more of an identity. And but not everybody wanted to be part, you know, although people were sympathetic to the cause.
Yeah.
Not everybody was comfortable with that word.
Well,
and to this day, you get a lot of people like, I've never called myself a Chicano. I'm a Mexican American.
Okay. So you say you call yourself a Mexican American and.
Well, I'm Mexican American. Actually, Hispanic, because, you know, most people, like, when I'm taking a survey, they'll ask, you know, what, you know, race, that kind of thing, Hispanic. Now, back then, when
but
I was growing
will
up.
But will you also, will you also call yourself Latino?
Oh, yeah.
So I mean, Latino, Hispanic, or Mexican-American, you have a lot of options. Chicano's just not the one for you.
Yeah, that's not what it... But see, back when I was growing up, people would just say, yeah, that guy's Mexican. Now somebody who's Mexican is actually from Mexico.
Right.
You see, so it just keeps evolving, and there's never really one way to say anything. You know, everybody has a different way of saying things, but a lot of people look at the word Chicano as being kind of radical.
Well, thank you very much for your call, Mike.
Sure.
Take
sure.
care. Well, that's interesting. That you have a lot of options. I don't have so many options. I don't have a lot of options.
Sure,
I have Jew and white guy. Yeah. I also have guy with a beard. But in terms of ethnic, you know, foundation, there's not a lot of choices for me. What about you? What are you?
Blondie.
That's not, but that's a, you know, that's a slang referring to your
dude.
Fake hair color.
A lot of people call me dude.
Yeah, it's that.
They don't even know me. They call me dude from a distance.
A lot happened in the world today, and we want to make sure you're caught up on current events before you go to bed, people. So here's tonight's edition of Mark Maron's Short Order News, friends. Italy has granted asylum to the Afghan man who faced beheading for converting from Islam to Christianity. Bill Gates has expressed interest in setting up a similar program for people who convert to Mac. Rahman was accused of being Christian after authorities noticed he was the only man in Afghanistan wearing a striper T-shirt. Hee-hee. This morning, the world experienced its first solar eclipse in 3 years. The White House hailed the 3-minute absence of sunlight as further proof against global warming. Don't be thrown off by Sarah Silverman coming in. I know it's hard to focus on the funny. Singer Tom Jones. Wait, I want Sarah. You got to listen to this. Can you hear me? You can hear me, right? Yeah, you can hear it. Singer Tom Jones was knighted today at Buckingham Palace. His knight name is Sir Lotsasnatch.
No.
Come on! That's Mark Maron's Short Order News for tonight. How can you lose with Sir Lotsasnatch? How can you lose with that one? I can't believe it. You're here. You're in the studio.
You know,
Can I introduce you?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Let me do it. Let me do it. Her movie, Jesus is Magic, comes out on DVD in June, right?
Yes.
Yes, I knew that. She's been seen on SNL, Mr. Show. She was in School of Rock. She was in The Aristocrat. She's on comedy stages around the country.
I was in a special two-part Star Trek Voyager in 97.
I remember that.
Really?
You look very good in the uniform. That was like one of your first big breaks, wasn't it, in the big TV business?
Yes.
And you're doing a pilot for Comedy Central, and I've known you since you were a little girl.
Yeah.
I feel like have.
You really have.
Am I right?
Can I say, and I shouldn't even say this out loud, because one of my most embarrassing memories of myself involves you. And it's, you did nothing. It's so embarrassing that you know what? It's not going to get a big laugh or anything, which is going to make it 10 times more embarrassing.
That's all right.
It's not a funny thing, but
it's human.
I got way into poetry. I was doing stand up, but I got way into poetry.
Yeah.
But I was also just like 18 or 19.
Right.
And I remember showing you a poem I'd written. It was so awful, but I really thought it was deep, and it was called Tunnel of Like.
Really?
Yeah, Tunnel of Like.
What did I do?
You read it and you're very nice, and then you just looked at me and you're just like, Tunnel of Like.
Come on. Did I really do that?
No, but you didn't do anything wrong. It was so queer. That's what kids that age are supposed to do. They're supposed to feel very heartbroken.
But I wrote poetry. I guess I'm kind of embarrassed. Oh, we got 1 minute. There was another time. We'll talk more. I remember meeting... You remember when we did that gig at that discotheque in, like, New Hampshire, and I swept over at your house up in with your mom?
Yes.
And I met your dad. We went over to your dad's house, and we had breakfast over there. Man, I remember that.
That was fun.
And we didn't sleep together or nothing.
It was a bowling alley.
We did I think we did two gigs. The one was a bowling alley, and one was like a dance floor situation.
Yes. Yes.
And you were like 12, and I was like 23.
And there was that Boston comic.
Who was that? Who was with us?
Oh, Steve Trilling.
Steve Trilling with the big teeth. Hello,
yes.
How are you?
I don't know if you know how sometimes you remember something, but then maybe it was a dream?
Sure.
But
it's been my whole last 2 years.
When I first did stand-up when I was 17, at the, all right, I know I have to go, but Steve Trilling, I could have sworn, had very tiny teeth.
He
had very tiny
teeth. He did, and then he went and got all these big new choppers.
Okay.
Yeah, and he was rumored to have a very large thing. That was the thing.
Vagina?
Yeah, huge vagina on Steve Trilling. We're with Sarah Silverman. Obviously, we've just entered the Silverman zone. We'll be back in a second. Stay with us. It's 20 past.
And now more on Steve Trilling's teeth. With Mark Maron.
Oh, it's compelling. It's amazing. 23 past the hour. Jim and I are sitting here with Sarah Silverman from television and movies.
I did hear a great story. Is that okay for me to come right in and say?
Absolutely.
That's a short one.
It's a great segue. And now I'm supposed to go, will you please tell us the story?
No, it just didn't occur to me because it's not my story, but it's a great story.
Okay.
Which is a friend of mine named Randall was talking to some hot L.A. girl, woman, and he made some sarcastic comment about Scientology, and she said, "Oh, I'm studying Scientology." He was like, "Oh, really?" And she goes, "Yeah, I find Scientology to be fascinating." And then she went, "Oh, psychology."
That's it? That was the segue? Psychology? She just switched from Scientology to psychology?
No, that's what she was thinking. She was thinking psychology.
Ah.
That's what she...
She must have been really hot.
This is going terribly.
No, it's not.
Oh, really?
No, it's going great.
Good.
You can't judge something that quickly. How can you judge something that quickly? Do you know people who are Scientologists? Do you actually know any real ones? Have you worked with them?
Yeah, I worked with this one Scientologist, but he was really nice. I even tried to once I heard he was a Scientologist, I tried to, like, pull it out of him on the, we're in between shots, and I was like, I just need a direction in life. Like, I want, because I wanted a story or something, but yeah. He was just really nice. I never really
you wanted him to. You wanted him to lay the rap on you? Well, that's coincidental, because yeah. I can help you.
Wouldn't you?
I could give you some guidance. Wait, was Chris from Kansas, were you just taking pictures of Sarah with your phone? It's like, dude, he's calling his friend, dude, I'm gonna do this right now. You're not gonna believe I'm hanging out with. And just sending him back to wherever he send him back to. So look, what does this pilot shoot? First of all, let's go back, because we were talking about when we were younger and you were a little girl and I was a comedian and we were traveling the road up in New Hampshire and I met your mom and I met your dad and I went to college with your sister who's a rabbi.
Yes. Moving to Israel with five children.
That's hardcore.
And they're going to live on a kibbutz.
They just
adopted their second Ethiopian boy.
What, now, was he Jewish coming in? In terms, was he one of the Ethiopian Jews, or
really
did they make him
ethnically?
Jewish?
Ethnically?
Yeah.
No, no, well, they don't know. He was an orphanage. And he's actually four. So he's like, he speaks Amharic. He doesn't speak English. All of a sudden, he's in Jutin Mass. And every picture she emails me, and this isn't good for radio, but he looks like this.
That's great for radio.
Can you describe that?
Bill, will you take a picture of the face so we can put that up on the blog for people to see in relatively real time? You're really good at radio. A lot of people don't realize that.
Sorry, I gave up. I gave up in the end. Oh, man. 20 minutes to get my picture taken.
A lot of people don't utilize the power of their face on radio. It's weird. I think that it's good to do that.
Yeah.
I do. So, wait, now your sister's married to a guy who, when I was in college, was like the radical.
Yeah, yeah.
He was like everyone. Joseph was his name, right?
Yosef.
I
know.
Sorry.
Even better.
Yosef. And this guy was always like protesting, doing things, running around angrily, making political stands. And everybody knew him on campus.
Yeah, he had the Divest Now big thing coming
banner
out.
Banner hanging
his thing out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's what he does. He's a real, they both are big activists.
Are you political at all, really, do you think? Generally speaking,
I'm not apathetic,
right.
But I'm not political, in my comedy or even just in the way I'm educated. Oh, you have fun. I mean, I got opinions.
Sure, man.
But I get them from others and from reading what I should think.
But, sometimes I think a lot of times.
But I read the right things that tell me the right things to think.
Absolutely. Reading feels like thinking. It's important. Yeah, it does. When I'm reading a book, I sometimes can't remember any of it. But when I'm doing it, I'm like, I'm a genius.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, when you're like me and you're a really slow reader, everything you read becomes the best thing you've ever read because it's such an accomplishment. Yeah. You really like absorb everything because there isn't much else.
I read almost everything as a self-help book, like whether it's a novel or whether it's like a book on political theory. I will see how it can change my life somehow, and that's the only way I can really approach things
that's
intellectually.
That's how Hitler did it.
Hey, wait a minute. Maybe there are big things in store for me. See, that's an interesting thing about things that you say, and I think we're going to talk about in a minute, is that even though you may not be political in your act, people sort of politicize you because you're provocative.
Yes, people politicize me, and I feel...
weird? Like this? Like awkward?
Am I this boring? You need to put music on in the background?
No, we're going
to
go on a break. We're with Sarah Silverman. Stay with us. About 29 past. You're in him, and he's in you, Mark Maron. Thank you, Jim. 35 past the hour. Our guest is Sarah Silverman, comedian, actress, provocateur, Sarah Silverman. We're talking about, what were we talking about when we left? Oh, how some people don't quite get you, and they politicize what you do. Do you find that?
Yeah, well, I was like I just feel like I don't think it's my job to define.
Yeah.
Who I am or make it bigger than it is or smaller than it is.
Just put it out there.
Somebody gets something out of it that in the context of their own lives they see, then that's wonderful. Or terrible, but I can't control it.
Yeah, I think, have you ever, twisted some person's brain to where they got angry at you? Have you ever had someone stand up in the audience and go, hey, what the hell?
Yeah.
You have?
Well, I have, but I'm not proud of it. I mean, sometimes, you know, people walk out and people get upset. And it's also hard. I do a lot of racial stuff. And if I'm just doing, a 10 or 15 minute set at the improv.
Sure.
It is important, and I've learned this because of that, to balance it. Because, if I go on and do, 90% black jokes or something, it doesn't even out as when it's all one piece.
You have to be an equal opportunity offender, as Don Rickles said.
Yes, and one night I think I was too much one side, and this 50-year-old black man just hated me. He was just yelling, everything. And
really?
Yeah, and that I was not funny, and I was offensive, and all this stuff. And I know this is wrong, but I told him to, if he had a problem with it, why doesn't he say something to my writer, Paul Mooney? I told him Paul Mooney wrote all my jokes because I knew he definitely knew Paul Mooney. I could tell. And he's like, he doesn't write for you. And I said, yes, he does. He writes all my jokes. So why don't you write a letter to him?
He probably did. Yo, Paul.
Yeah, it was sleazy.
Now, do you have, you're not married, right? You're just hanging out?
I'm married. I'm common law married. No, pardon. I don't know. No, I don't know. I'm married in my heart.
Oh, really? That's so sweet.
It's not. We don't have the government involved
in it. Did you give him the Tunnel of Like poem?
I should. It's embarrassing.
So your heart has been given to Jimmy Kimmel?
Yes.
The talk show personality.
Totally.
He's got kids.
Yes.
How many?
Two.
How's that? Hanging out with kids, being with a guy that's got kids.
It's good. It's nice, listen.
Yeah.
It's not great.
Yeah.
But they're really cool kids, and
yeah.
He's a good dad, I think.
Do they ever come up to you and go, "Dad kind of sucks?"
No.
No.
Well, he's got a teenage daughter, so she'll be like, "Dad thinks I know what I like, and he doesn't at all."
That's normal, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But I think she thinks of it in an endearing way. He got her a jean jacket that was all bedazzled and everything. And she was like, I can't. She was giving it stuff away, and she's like, I can't give this away as much as I'd like to because Dad got it for me. But it's awful.
My mother still insists on sending me things I can't possibly wear. She's made a decision about what I like, and it's never been right. And I have literally a closet full of shirts that are completely unwearable. It's like a shrine to my mommy.
Aww.
Look what she gave me that I can't use.
I think that was probably the plan.
You think so? Just so it's like guilt in the closet. So I open it up and go, see what you're not doing? You also have nieces and nephews, right? You're surrounded by kids.
Yeah. Well, they're all in Massachusetts.
Five. Yeah. Are you going to have kids? Do you want to have kids?
I don't think so.
Really? No go?
I love them, but yeah.
What's the problem?
I'll be honest. I don't want to pass on my genes.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You're afraid? They're dangerous?
No, I think they're great, but I'm hoarding them. No, I don't. I don't. There's terrible depression in my family, and I can't bear watching it. But maybe I'll adopt, in my 40s or something. I won't rule it out, but I definitely don't want to have kids.
Yeah. You don't strike me as a depressive. Are you? Do you feel depressed sometimes?
No, because I've been taking Zoloft since 93.
Really? Since you were one of the first?
I was a pioneer.
You're like patient zero of Zoloft.
I am. I'm patient zero of a lot of
things. Oh, come on. Since 93 and it's continued working?
It's, a lot of people have to try a million things. No, it was 90, maybe, it was 94 actually.
Yeah.
It worked right away. It was just the perfect fit for me, and I've always been on the lowest dose and...
How does it mix with pot?
It's not bad at all. I have no problems with it with pot.
Yeah?
Yeah. I had a problem with it with ecstasy, but I'm glad that I stopped ecstasy anyway. I feel like I got out of it scot-free.
Yeah, that stuff's kind of nasty, I think.
Oh, my God. I read an article. The last time I ever did it, I read an article in Newsweek about it, and I just never did it again. I felt like, oh, my God. I'm
one of those articles where it's drains your spinal fluid and...
It wasn't a negative. It just was what it is and what it does and how, It was very, didn't seem, skewed in any way. And it was just wow, thank God I got, but I'm sure it still affected me in the long run.
So before we wrap it up,
Let's what do you think, like, out of your jokes? Because I, you know, I know a lot of your jokes, and I was trying to think of some of the jokes, and my wife knows a lot of your jokes, and we were talking about your jokes.
Mishnah.
Yes, we're talking about your jokes, and out of all the jokes that you've done, which do you think? Because I know there was some controversy about something you said on Conan, but I didn't think that was really that controversial.
Boring.
It wasn't at all. Yeah, it was ridiculous. But what do you think? Which one of your jokes do you think is the one that really screws people up the most? That you know when it's coming out of your mouth that's the one that are going to make people go, "Oh, what the?" Because I know I have them. You don't have any?
No, I do. There was one that I even stopped doing because it was just too painful, and it was like so long for such a short. And it was, it was just something about how Bayer Aspirin funded, you know, like medical, you know, like science experiments on Jews in the Holocaust.
Yeah.
Aren't I prolific? I am so articulate.
Yeah, it's great. You should have your own radio show.
You're welcome. I know. I'm really showing you up.
So it was about Bayer Aspirin doing experiments.
Yeah,
on Jews,
like, you know, my headache is better. You know, it's better than the hunger. It's, you
right,
know,
right.
I feel not as bad as the how much I miss my family. You know,
And you just ditched it altogether.
Yeah.
Because it was too creepy.
It's better than the time I was in labor and you sewed up my vagina.
Oh.
Can I say that?
Sure, you can say vagina.
Yeah, of course.
There's nothing wrong with vagina. It's a clinical term.
It's a beautiful, smelly thing.
Yeah,
that everybody has.
Well, at least, yes, most women have them, and a few men, if they order them, I guess.
Right.
Come on, Sarah.
Thank God.
Tell me about the show, and then we'll let you go.
Television show?
Yeah, you're doing a television
show. Like, I have which one?
I know.
No, I only
the
have
movie, the
one. The
stage show, the television show. Because Todd Barry was on, and he's writing for you, and he was kind of cagey about it. It's like, I don't know if I'm allowed. Like, it was top secret. And then he just said, it's about a day in her life.
Yeah, I don't, you know what? I don't think it's top secret. I think he couldn't figure out a way to explain it, which is how I am. And it's not because it's some high concept thing. It's
right.
Just I don't have someone needs to write a log line or something.
You don't have one?
It's just like a day in my life. It's absurd, but, you know, played small, which is, you know, I like that. The contrast of,
yeah,
you know, and there's usually a song, you know, we're writing six episodes and it's,
okay.
You know,
so there's going to be absurdity, a song. It's a day in your life. So I turn the TV on. It's like you sitting up in bed when the alarm goes off, stretching, going, yay.
Yeah, it's like one episode I wake up with the blahs. And so I decide I need some good news. So I get an AIDS test. And because, of course, I don't have AIDS. But then as she's asking me all the questions, I'm like, you know, have you had unprotected sex? And I'm like, no, I haven't. You know, and then she's like, we just use the real questions. Like she says, did you ever have a blood transfusion in the 80s? And I say, yes. And she said, oh, you did? You had a blood transfusion in the 80s? And then I said, oh, no, no, I'm sorry. I thought you said in Haiti.
Okay. Well, that sounds like it's going to be funny.
It's a nice taste, a little flavor.
Thank you very much.
Poking in the door.
Oh, it's Scary Rick Overton here to make us laugh. Well, thank you, Sarah. I hope you enjoyed your time here.
I did. I hope you enjoyed my time here.
I did.
Here.
And say hi to Jimmy and his kids. I'm sure he's listening.
Will.
Is he listening? Do you think he would listen?
He is listening. Fact he's listening.
Isn't he going on the air like momentarily?
No, he's off this week.
Oh, sweet. Yeah. All right, well, I'm going to do this now, and you're going to sort of walk out and wave nicely.
Okay. Okay.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks,
Sarah
everybody.
Silverman, folks. Hey, we here at the Mark Maron Show want to make positive contributions to society, so every night we bestow an honor upon one distinguished citizen whose actions most clearly or closely represent those of our esteemed vice president. Without further ado, we present the Mark Maron Show's Dick of the Day. Look, people, I've got cats. Some of you know that. I got a lot of cats. Four, actually. Three of them are feral. Let's be honest, I'm bordering on being a male cat lady. I've been rejected, attacked, peed upon, and bloodied by these cats, folks. I've hated them so much at times that I even thought about having them put to sleep just because they didn't like me. But I didn't. I love them. I understand them, and they've all turned into great pets. What's the point, Mark? Where are you going with this? Where's the dick? Well, neighbor... It's a full house in here. Well...
A neighborhood full of wussies had a pussy problem, and they called in the authorities to solve it. Let me explain. The Sunset Circle neighborhood, in which I'm assuming is a not a dangerous hood, had a cat that was attacking people. Right? It wasn't a tiger or a panther or a bobcat. A house cat, folks. A house cat named Lewis. Lewis is accused of ambushing an Avon lady and attacking at least six people. Some were sent to the hospital. An Avon lady? What year is it in this town? 1958? She might have deserved it for being annoying. Don't these people know how to run away or instill fear in a cat? Here's how you defend yourself against a house cat outside. Ah! And it runs away. All right? So the rats in this enclave call in the animal control unit, and they place a restraining order on the cat. Not just for slashing the Avon lady, but at the request of the calico across the street that Lewis had been stalking. Folks, this had never been done in Fairfield before. All right. Then the animal control cops arrested the cat's owner. All right. Believe me when I tell you, folks, Lewis the cat got just what he wanted. His own house with no one in it. If he could only figure out how to open the door so he could feed on Jehovah's Witnesses and Fuller Brush Salesmen, he'd be in cat heaven. Here's what you do with a wild house cat, my friends. You leave it alone. Respect its territory. Negotiate with it. So for inventing policy to make a point, overreacting with law enforcement, and arresting an innocent person who didn't understand who was in charge at her house, the Animal Control Unit and the City of Fairfield are the Mark Maron Show's Dick of the Day. Wow. That was a long one. But I think personal and relevant, my friends. And momentarily, here's what we're going to do right now. We've got comedian Rick Overton, and we've got from the Marijuana Policy Project, Francis Della Vecchia, who are going to talk to us about pot. Right, Rick?
About medicine.
Right, that's what I used to call it, too. I used to call it medicine.
That's what the stores are all calling it.
Yeah, and thank God
more
those
and more.
That's what those stores, and we're going to talk about defending the rights of those stores to exist, to dispense medical marijuana. We're going to talk about, I imagine, the party you guys are having to raise money to protect medical marijuana dispensaries and stop the criminalization of people that smoke a little reefer, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I think a cokehead president ought to back off on the potheads.
I bet you that guy smokes some reefer too, don't you?
Well, it'd be less war. Clinton was the pothead. No war with the pothead. Well, that's too intense. No.
Yeah, yeah.
The cokehead's like, nothing else works down here. I'm going to start a war.
Yeah, well, that's what probably happened with George. He probably took a hit of pot and said, I see myself too clearly. I really am insecure. Give me the white stuff. Give me the white stuff.
Exactly. I'm all paranoid and jittery on life.
Yeah. Quick, give me a couple lines. Can I use your gold card? Hey, so here we are. Now, what is Francis Della Vecchia, you are from the Marijuana Policy Project.
That's right.
I think we've got, do we have a second to kind of say what it is, and then we'll come back and talk about it?
Yeah, it's the largest marijuana policy reform organization in the country. It's based in D.C., mm-hmm. and we work on the national level and in all the states, working to fight for the rights of medical marijuana patients and to eventually make sure that marijuana is treated like alcohol and tobacco.
Great. So we're going to talk about that. There was actually some legislation or some people at the L.A. County Board of Supervisors who are trying to regulate and limit where medical marijuana dispensaries can be located. This was yesterday, so we'll get into that. It's about 49 past the hour. Stay with us. It's the Mark Maron Show.
You're listening to a man who still has Cheney Buckshot in his ass. Mark Maron.
Oh, come on. All right, here we go. We're doing it. Sarah Silverman just left. She walked out with her tea. Comedian Rick Overton and from the Marijuana Policy Project, Francis Della Vecchia, are here. This Friday here in Los Angeles, the Marijuana Policy Project is throwing a party here at the Playboy Mansion, a fundraiser. All proceeds will go to the overall mission of the Marijuana Policy Project to end marijuana prohibition in the United States. I got to be honest with you guys. You know, I quit doing the drugs and the drinking years ago, about, you know, over 6 years ago. And the one that I miss the most, and that way we don't have to talk about, you know, pot in a recreational way, but the one I miss the most is pot. Now, in terms of, let's talk about what happened here in L.A. County today. The Board of Supervisors ordered that regulations to limit where medical marijuana dispensaries, you know, could be located. Now, do you see this as a slippery slope for the people that are against the legislation to allow these things to exist as starting to push them back?
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, if yes, there's certainly an effort to push back the dispensaries, but at the same time, we have nothing against rational regulation, just like you'd regulate an alcohol store that sells alcohol, a store that sells tobacco. There's nothing against that. Moratoriums and things about banning them, I think, are out of line.
Right.
But we would say let's regulate. Let's continue in sensible regulation and go move on from medical and eventually move it into selling it just like you would alcohol and tobacco for the general public.
Now, I guess my concern, I think the concern of pot consumers, and I can speak as a past pot consumer and certainly an appreciator of the herb, is that once you get a taxation model going and it is available like that, not unlike alcohol, isn't there a concern that the good stuff will not be as available and that there's going to be a tempering of the quality of pot?
the bills that, and like, we have one right now in Nevada.
Okay.
It's going to be voted on this November. Mm-hmm. So it would be in a store, it would be sold up to an ounce for anyone 21 and over with ID.
Mm-hmm.
But you could also grow it on your own.
Right.
Okay. And so I think, I would imagine that if you play it out, there could potentially be a larger quantity of marijuana that is perhaps not so wonderful, like some Budweiser.
Sure.
And there might be some, some private reserve brews, like microbrews, and you would find those as well. So I think the first thing is let's get it regulated and let's stop putting people in, because what we're really about is keeping people out of jail.
For pot.
Exactly.
Yeah, show of hands, who has the extra money to pay to keep one individual in prison for a year because of that?
And it's us.
We pay for every penny of them being in there.
Sure, and some states bust them and treat them like, hardcore criminals.
Yeah, they let the killer out first.
And they let the guy who just smoked a little pot or got busted with maybe less than an ounce even, who are doing hard time. Isn't that right?
That's right. He does hard time, the killer gets out.
Right. Now, the medical dispensaries, is there an issue around it seemed to me that there was concern in San Francisco and that there was some concern around these things that the people, that they were just becoming distribution centers for pot in general and not necessarily honoring the prescription nature of it. Is that usually what the right or what people against these things, bring up?
Well, certainly the ones that get busted, they pick the ones like anything else. They pick the ones that look the most like a drug deal.
You mean like an apartment?
Joe's
medical marijuana dispensary?
It's no OxyContin deal.
That's right.
With Rush Limbaugh.
Sure.
But, for crying out loud, there's a lot of different drugs that people do pass their script.
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, I believe that that to deny people the medical uses of marijuana, especially with the success they've had with treating cancer, hunger and cancer patients, glaucoma and whatnot, is great. My only concern is, and just as an individual, is that there's some really good pot out there, dude. All right, and
there's good beer out there.
All right. I'm not going to argue with you.
We're agreeing.
But let me just ask you a question though.
Yep.
There is a ceiling to how a beer can affect you.
Yeah.
I have smoked some pot in my life where I was literally retarded good 7 or 8 hours.
Ever been to a Greek wedding?
Not that I remember.
That's a room full of retarded people breaking dinnerware.
Okay.
Booze got them there. That's Ouzo, baby.
No, I hear you. So now, what is your role in this gig here, Rick?
I'm going to host a comedy show.
And who's going to come down and do it?
Francis, throw the lineup, baby.
This host of the Playboy Mansion Thursday night.
Yeah.
We have Rick's our fabulous MC. We have 700 guests coming out. We have Ray Benson of Asleep at the Wheel doing some music. We've got Rocco DeLuca closing it up with DJ Shark. It's going to be a fabulous evening.
All right, well, let's just hang out for 1 minute. We'll say goodbye after the break. We're talking to Rick Overton, and we are talking to Francis Delavecchia from the Marijuana Policy Project. It's 59 past.
Live from Burbank, California, the leading cause of global warming, it's the Marc Maron Show. And now, he's recycling his condoms. Marc Maron!
Oh, Jim. That's good. That's right, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lovers of pot, lurking conservatives. We are here right now with from the Marijuana Policy Project, Francis Delavecchia and comedian Rick Overton, who will be the MC of the festivities at the Playboy Mansion this week on Friday night to raise funds for the Marijuana Policy Project to continue their fight to decriminalize marijuana and make it easier for people to get it medicinally.
That's
dig
right.
That, right? So here
right.
We got a blogger has had a comment here. Marijuana. I've always thought that marijuana should be legal. Just put the same kind of restrictions on it that you put on tobacco and alcohol, then tax it the way you tax cigarettes. The people here in my part of Cali would eliminate the deficit in one Friday night. It'll never happen, though, because pot being legal and easy to obtain would hurt the pharmaceutical companies. Weed is a drug that people can just grow and use or sell, which means the folks in Washington wouldn't be the ones making all the money. If these guys want to legalize it, they need to get themselves some tobacco lobbyists to champion their cause. That's from Lights Must Go Out here on the blog at markmaron.com. And you say, Francis, that you have a lobbyist.
We have the only full-time marijuana lobbyist on Capitol Hill. He's working every day for us.
If he can get out of the house. If he can get off the couch. I'm sorry, I couldn't see it. How can I know it?
As governor of California, I can say that marijuana is partly the reason why I'm here, because I can dream. If you can dream crazy thoughts in your car at the red light, they can become true. Look at me. You see me lifting the weights, getting bigger, stronger, smoking pot in pumping iron, motivated, success. I get everyone out of my way. I'm smoking pot out of the way. I'm governor. Constitution's monstitution. I'm headed for the White House.
Dude, take a hit.
Oh. No, I'm happy here.
I'm sorry I trivialize a cause, but it's so easy to make pot jokes, and I'm saying it
you're not
love.
The first.
By the way, it's not a drug.
Yeah.
Not a drug. A drug is when you took a plant, yank it out of the ground, send it off to Germany for a bunch of animal killers to go and do something evil to it. It comes back as a crunchy white pill that your HMO can't afford. Then it's a drug.
Wow, man. See what happened? I just got hit with a rift tendril. Overton comes in. It's like the brain opens up and the Medusa of rift tendrils comes out. It's like, oh, my God, I'm now Overton's puppet. That was a good one, man. Damn.
Oh.
So now can you tell me some legislative progress you've made? I mean, the Las Vegas thing, that's interesting. But like personal or victories for the marijuana policy project.
The latest one was Rhode Island became the 11th medical marijuana state.
Okay.
Lucky 11.
Are they going to make a special flag? We'll all make it, man. I'm sorry. See, I did it again. Okay. All right. Well,
coming up is a big vote in Congress, something called the Hinchey Amendment, which basically takes away federal funding so it doesn't let the DEA or the Justice Department go after patients in medical marijuana states. So it would stop the feds from coming into California and busting people who use medical marijuana with a doctor's note.
And weren't they able to do something like that in terms of when you actually had legitimate marijuana patients growing their own dope, that they got busted for that and they weren't busted for just getting it at the dispensary, but for some reason they were able to push charges on them as a
loophole.
Yeah, loopholes like that, and they keep looking. I just don't know why the hell they waste time with that stuff, with pot.
If you're chasing after someone with pot instead of someone with a bomb, you're a crime against us. That's a crime to be chasing pot now. That should be the crime. Instead of stopping our borders and our ports, you're putting guys on this. You're out of your mind.
What are some of the excuses they make? What do they say are the liabilities of pot that are just, I think, a cover-up from what this guy's saying is that if they can't figure out a way to make money out of it, they're not going to make it legal.
Right.
Well, the DEA continues to say that marijuana is the most dangerous drug that there is out
on,
there.
On what's the premise?
That it's the most readily available and most easily accessible for children. So they continue to push this gateway drug theory, where of course, what the real gateway is the fact that you can't go and get it in a store, so you have to go get it from someone on the street, and that person on the street probably has more than just marijuana. They may have cocaine, they may have meth, they may have something else.
Right.
So the real gateway is the fact that there's prohibition.
Uncontrollability.
Right.
Is the gateway.
And also there's a problem that they might have two or three kinds of marijuana, and then you got that weird choice thing where it's like, wait, well, but which is the better, and why does it have different names? Which can confuse a kid.
You tell us we don't want something? That's very good. Yeah, come on. Make up your mind. Yeah, you're my authority. Yeah. I base my life on your view.
Yeah, please.
But the fact that, you know, the regulation issue is such an issue means that isn't the issue to them. They want another kind of buck. You know, Hearst started this battle with he had all his money in paper stocks from trees, and you can't have the male plant competing with you, so you kill the female, can't make the male plant, make it illegal. You got newspapers, make up news stories, say it's a crime.
Yeah. Okay. All right. See, now right there, right when you started that one, Rick, I was like, okay, we got Hearst, and now we're back to the pot. And I had a, you know, it took me a second to come around to you.
Just a second.
Yeah. But I
that's
I mean,
all it took, baby.
Yeah.
So that's all I'm saying. You're looking at it from the other side of the coin.
I feel high. Whenever you
it's all contacts. It's, yeah. This business is just contacts.
Hey, man, quit screwing my head, dude.
Tendril.
No, stop it, man.
Tendril.
No, stop. Get it out of me. Get
Agreed.
It out of me. Get it
Agreed.
Out. Oh, no, I'm Overton's puppet. Look at me go. So who's so can people go to this thing at the mansion? That's kind of a special event or what?
Unfortunately, we just sold out. We may release a couple more tickets. They can go to the website marijuanapolicy.org. Mm-hmm. Get on the waiting list. We may release a couple more tomorrow.
And you got me a cool hat. I got my marijuana policy project hat.
Cool.
Yeah, you guys are tempting me, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
You know, I've been off the reefer for a long time. But I used to enjoy getting, you know, what I used to say is, like, the great thing about having pot in the house is that all your hobbies fit into a little box. You know what I mean? You're just sort of like, you know, what are we going to do today? I think we got a day planned here, you know, and then it was all taken care of.
Yeah,
things started to glisten and resonate and make sense.
That's where art comes from.
Oh, listen to the devil in me telling me to do it again.
Oh, you got the other voice on the shoulders.
Not sure
for
do.
You, buddy.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You still believe others
on,
can
dude.
Have it.
You don't need to do it because when you do it all the time. And then the other guy's going, yeah, but isn't that the right way to be? Don't you want to be relaxed? Remember how creative you were?
Yeah.
Oh, you should just sit there and think about things you were going to write all day.
And all yet, right. There's a lot of great stuff written.
There are some guys, I'll be honest with you, and I've been in this this game for a while. There are some cats that can handle it, some cats that can't. One time, and he won't mind if I mention his name, Greg Proofs, we were doing the Alex Bennett Show back in San Francisco. It was 6 in the morning. It was a live Alex Bennett Show. You know, we used to have to do those things where they do breakfast somewhere and you perform at 6 right. in the morning to do live morning radio.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Proofs shows up with wherever the hell he got his pot, which I think was from a lab of some sort. It's like, this stuff could really hurt somebody. Give it to Greg. So he shows up with this stuff, and it's 6 in the morning, dude. And he's like, you want to do a hit? And I'm like, sure, why not? You know, what have I got to lose? I'll just go back to sleep lately. So I take a hit, and we're on stage doing what we're doing right now. Greg is like, blah, 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 riffing his brains out. I am retarded.
It's not for you.
I cannot even say word one. And Greg kept going, what's the matter, Mark? You okay? You okay over there? And then he said, Mark Maron, I invented you. But fellas, I hope you have a great event in Overton. Overton, you got to come back and play around here with us.
Taking you up on that.
We're going to take a call from some people about immigration, get into that in a little bit, and get Jim Earl sing us a song. But give me the website again there, Francis.
Marijuanapolicy.org.
There you go. Francis Delvecchio, comedian Rick Overton. Thanks a lot. We'll be back in a second. It's about 16 past.
Roll another.
And now back to a guy who makes six figures in his pajamas. Mark Maron.
What are you, high? What are you, high?
Yeah, you know, I hung out there with Rick.
With Overton. Man. That maybe, I tell you, I don't, those conversations.
I got a contact high.
I did too, but I always get that with Overton, whether he's high or not. I get a Rick Overton contact high. That guy's just uplifting.
I know. What are you doing this Saturday?
Dude, it's so funny you mentioned that, but you and me and Mishnah Wolf are performing at Steinway's this Saturday, April 1st. You can go to markmaron.com for info and tickets. It's right there on the right of the homepage. Click there, get the information, call the number, email the lady. All right? And if you tell her that Mark and Jim sent you, she'll take a little, she might take $10 off the price of admission. How do you like that? This place only seats 100, Jim, and it's in the basement of Fields Piano Store. I wish I could go on and say, Fields is a historic piano store. You actually have to, you can park in the parking lot there, and then you got to go on an elevator and press P2 to get to the actual venue. It's very complicated. It's sort of, James Bondish. It's like in a cavern.
Jeez, are people going to be scared?
No, but it's going to be definitely an intimate event with you and I. How are you feeling? You feeling confident?
I'm very confident. Is it okay if I just kind of bring some notes on stage?
Hey, that's up to you, however you want to appear. I'm just happy that there's a woman out there who came to see me the night that Carlos Mencia came on and decided to do a breakfast show and stay on stage so they ordered donuts. And she came on, she came to see me that night, and I didn't go on because I left because I was insulted and my pride was hurt and I was furious at the situation. And she felt pissed off, and I understand that, but she's coming down. And for her, I'm doing the show for her, and also for a kid who's in a coma down here at the hospital around the corner. You know what I mean? I'm just trying to reach out. But I want your jokes to be efficient.
Why did you hurt that kid?
I didn't do anything to the kid.
You ran over a kid, and now you're paying him back.
Oh, my God. What do you know, it started out like a nice story. Now you got to bring the truth into it. Yes. All right? And I didn't really want to get into it.
Can I ask you another question?
If it's about, what you – if what?
Hey, Mark, what are you doing this Saturday?
Funny you should mention that, Jim. I'm appearing with you. We have a guest. Can we be polite? We are continuing here on the Mark Maron Show. We are continuing our Mark Maron Show Poetry Showcase. We have a very special guest who is actually new to the L.A. area. The L.A. Weekly called Lewis Harkin an exciting new voice on the growing cultural phenomenon of slam poetry. That's no small praise. Yep. He's originally from North Carolina, where he gave up. Now, what did you used to do down there?
I had a fairly successful septic system insulation business and repair. If you had a problem with your toilet or septic system related to that, we would come in and fix that or, advise you as to whether to replace it or anything, related to that.
So you quit your own business to follow this?
Gave it all up.
When did you know you wanted to do the poetry?
It happened right after our family upgraded to premium cable.
Uh-huh.
Because with premium cable, you get HBO.
Oh, okay.
And on the HBO, there's the Russell Simpkins Deaf Poetry Jam television program.
Russell Simpkins.
I saw that, Simpkins.
Yeah.
Anyway, saw that program, and I turned to my wife, Lenore, and I said, this is it. Everything's changing.
So it's that style. That slam. I like that show, and I think it's a great show.
It's a great show. I decided right then and there we're going to move to where they shoot that show, which is Los Angeles.
Sure.
Found out later what it wasn't. But we're here. So
you're doing all right here?
We're doing all right. We found the scene. I try to perform at the Poetry Lounge.
Sure.
Where you get up there and
I've not been there, but I'm just back for a
very
couple
exciting.
Months.
Very exciting.
I'd like to come see it. So maybe I'll come by this weekend. You got any? So you're going to read some poems tonight, right?
Yes, I'd like to sort of go through my my body of work up to this point.
Great.
And if I could, I just really appreciate the opportunity.
No, it's great. I'm looking forward to it. So this is Lewis Harkin. He's going to do some of his slam poetry.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. This first piece is the first piece that I wrote after being inspired to engage in this. It's called Need It Back. Carl Beachley, my neighbor. Carl Beachley, I need it back. On special at Lowe's, you know how it goes. Carl Beachley sees my new weed whacker and he borrows it right away. Black and Decker, Decker and Black. Carl Beachley, you're giving me a heart attack, ack, 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 Billy Joel. You took my bandsaw, you took my hose. Carl Beachley says, you know how it goes. You borrow my tools. You look at my wife. What's next, Carl Beachley? You want my wife or do you want my life? Carl Beachley, weed whacker. I need it back, 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 Billy Joe.
All right.
Thank you very much. Namaste.
That was great. I mean, namaste. I hope you don't mind that I'm laughing because you meant a little funny there, right? You meant a little funny there.
Well, if you take a metaphor to be funny, yeah, sure.
Okay. All right.
That's
all right.
Fine.
Okay.
That's fine.
So we got time for another one before break.
Appreciate this. This next one, you examine your life, you kind of look at the contents of your life and, the things around you. So this one is inspired by, is my home life and the people around me.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Father Time. Yuck! My wife is getting fat. Father Time has a way of giving us all a sway, something called the gravity dance. And who am I to say what looks bad and what looks okay? Can I point the finger of blame Has not my frame gone through a change? Actually, no. I'm the same weight I was when we got first married. She is fat. Seriously fat. She's got more folds than an origami dragon. She feels like a garbage bag full of mayonnaise, full of pudding, full of the goddamn food she will not stop eating. But I love this woman. So maybe it's me. Maybe it's society. Maybe it's the Dream Factory telling us all who we're supposed to be. I don't know. I ain't got a damn TiVo. Snap. So I'll let her be who she wants to be, even if it means onset diabetes. Namaste.
Wow, man.
Yeah.
Wow. That's
think about that.
Well, it's deep at the end. You know, it's powerful. But, you know, you let her be who she is, you know.
Well, she's fat.
Well, what are you going to do? That happens. And, you know, you got some references there. I mean, I don't want to judge. People judge people who come from your part of the country just based on their accent or their appearance. But you're definitely.
I'm exploring parts of myself that I never knew existed.
I think that's great.
I'm holding the mirror up.
I think that's great because I certainly don't want to judge.
No. Who are we to judge? We're not God.
That's right. No, that's true. Now, do you find yourself. What's been the reaction? Because I know that. In the slam poetry community, that there's a lot of African Americans.
Yes,
They must look at you like, you know, what the hell?
Well, no, actually, they've embraced me, and I've learned a little bit about themselves.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I have a poem that kind of reflects the changes that I've learned from the community.
Oh, really?
It's a real quick one.
Okay,
real quick one.
We'll go like 30 seconds.
All right, that's fine. Okay. This one's called Words. Words, I say them. I write them down. Everybody uses words. You use words, black fella. You use words, Jew. You use words, Spanish-speaking guy. So I guess we're not so different after all. Only trouble is, I can't understand what the Spanish-speaking guy is saying. Am I right, Jew? Words. See? I bring the community together.
I kind of feel that. So you got one more we'll do over the break.
Yeah.
Our guest is Lewis Harkin. He's a slam poet.
Yeah.
Obviously, a unique take on slam poetry.
Indeed.
And he's just new to L.A. Stick with us for more of Lewis 29 Past.
Now, he never loses suction. Mark Maron.
Those are getting weird. Am I wrong? They're getting weird?
Yeah, I do a lot of them every day.
I know.
I have to go take it to the limit.
I appreciate it. I really do. We're here with Lewis Harkin, a slam poet from North Carolina, new to L.A. He's going to do one more poem for us. Appreciate you being here, man.
Thank you for having me. Great opportunity for me. I wanted to end this last one. This one's probably my heaviest piece. It's kind of a double-edged sword of political content. Let's just get into it. It's called New Shoes. I always get my shoes from Eddie Bauer, but today I got my shoes by Nike, N-I-K-E. I rolled the dice. I took a chance, and Lady Luck laughed. 'Cause these shoes by Nike don't feel so good on my fallen arches. I rolled the dice. I took a chance, and Lady Luck laughed at me. 'Cause these shoes by Nike don't feel so good on my fallen arches. Tell me, Nike, is the pain I feel in my fallen arches the pain they felt in the fallen towers? You tell me, 'cause all I know is I'm out $90 and my feet hurt. Never forget.
That's heavy. Yeah,
right?
That was powerful.
Yeah, we're gonna have to let that one sit for a minute.
React to that one.
I bet you get maybe some tears, outrage.
People throw things. Yeah, it gets pretty heavy.
Well, that's the price you pay for art, for expressing yourself sometimes.
Yeah, I'm just a vessel, you know. I'm just like a conduit, whatever.
Yeah.
In a septic system, I'm kind of like the plunger.
The same thing.
Yeah, I'm
sure.
A total total power.
But it must be a relief to be out of that business, so I'd imagine.
Oh, no, it's good. It's good. Sure. You know, you meet nice people. You get to go in their houses, and they give you coffee and stuff.
So you mean a septic business. So that's always there for you, plan B, right?
Oh, no. I gave that up. I'm never going back. I know this is my path.
Well, I think you're doing great, and I appreciate you coming down, Lewis Harkin.
Thank you.
Good luck, Mark, with it. And well, hopefully you'll come back around another time.
I'd love to. I'll work on some stuff tonight.
Okay, thanks
a lot.
Thank
you so much.
Yep. So, Lewis is going to be on a show that's coming up on, this. When is this show here? I got to look at the date.
Thursday the 30th.
Okay, yeah, that's tomorrow. Thursday the 30th, you're going to be working with Trev and the Rev. This is what happens when a washed-up 80s pop star and his ex-drug buddy turned Christian youth minister try to save souls. This is a comedy show that you're doing.
Yeah. It sure is.
Yes. Yes. All right. That was Brian Husky. He is going to be performing with Seth Morris in this show down at the UCB. So go see that. See, I just want to commit the whole way through, you know, Jim? I just want to keep committing.
You did a great job.
So let's switch gears here. This guy Sanchez has been on the phone for like an hour to talk about immigration. So let's switch gears. Sanchez in L.A., what do you got for me?
Brother Marin, man.
Yes, sir.
I want to make a couple of comments about the current situation concerning, and I'm going to call it immigration. First off, the way Sensenbrenner is talking about, and I've heard his speech concerning how he was introducing the immigration bill, how he said that the economy, when it collapses, it will be because of the burden of the illegal aliens, and we're specifically talking the Latino aliens. Completely wrong. We all know the reason why the economy is going to collapse. So there's a falsehood right there.
The economy is going to collapse because, you know, of insane deficits and war spending, right?
Correct.
Now, the immigration that you're talking about, Sensenbrenner's bill, so you're saying he's just race baiting, number one. And according to Krugman, to Paul Krugman, that this is a difficult issue, Sanchez, because a lot of liberals, a lot of progressives are trying to be reasonable about this and honor the laws, the current laws that are on the books, and also honoring, you know, the fact that a lot of this immigration law has been transcended by Republican policies in order to bust unions.
Exactly.
So, your point about the issue is what exactly?
Well, look, it's so complicated. It's as twisted as a bonsai tree. You know, on one hand, look, the Republicans are openly attacking the Latino immigrants, but behind the closed doors, you know, they're happily counting the profits. I mean, they're making mad paper off this stuff because of the influx of the people, the available workforce. It's artificially keeping our wages low.
That's exactly it. So the whole idea that Bush says that, they're taking jobs, that they're doing jobs that Americans aren't willing to do is not really the truth. Is that the influx of this unskilled labor is lowering the wage down about 8%. So it's not even a matter. They're not the same jobs that they once were. Even the lowest paid Americans, it's not the same jobs that were once available.
Exactly. And on the other side of the issue, which also affects everybody as well, is the burden on the infrastructure, including education. And this has come up on the radio station before. I've heard discussion of this where they try to blame it on specifically only the Latino immigrants. And one time you had a caller call, and she worked for the L.A. Board of Education, and
right.
She correctly identified that, no, this is not just the influx of Latinos, but it's the population from all over the world. It's a heavy burden for us to endure. And by the end of the year, we're going to spend, what, $420 billion on the Iraqi war?
Unbelievable.
I know. And you know.
Yeah. You know, it's a sad thing in terms of there's a lot of people, a lot of immigrants that are waiting for green cards, waiting for the possibility of being an American citizen, who are actually over there fighting. And I think that the biggest crime of this whole thing is that because of the way the corporatocracy works and because that these people are exploited, is you have a real disposable person kind of quality to this, a real slave labor quality to it. So on that side of it, in some respects, you know, treating the laws that are on the books with respect and maybe moving some of these people, you know, back to Mexico is actually being more respectful.
Yes, but last night when I was listening to your show, I heard Jim correctly identify that most of the problems behind this are down south of the border in Mexico as well as the other countries because, I mean, come on, we have to admit that those governments are so corrupt. We're only getting a taste of it here, but we're seeing how our government, you know, should things continue the way they are.
All right, well, I think that you made a lot of good points, Sanchez, and now I got to think about them.
Okay, well, hey, let me give you one correct identification. education about Chicano, if I can, man.
Okay.
The word goes beyond the 60s into the 50s. It was a transition between the Pachucos of the 1940s.
I like Pachuco. Is that a bad word?
Well, it was describing the Zoot Suiters. Pachuco was a cool word, actually.
I like that word.
Yeah.
I heard that when I was growing up.
Remember, like, imagine if you could, Cab Calloway, if he were born in East L.A. That's what
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, but then it change of clothing, change of music, change of attitude. The Chicanos were the kids. They used to get in trouble. They were the Latino kids.
Right.
I don't have a problem with it. In the 60s, yes, they changed the word. Yes, now it's a positive word. But any Chicano worth his weight in honesty will readily admit to you that that is the root of the word. So I just
wanted
to make sure you knew that, man.
I appreciate it, buddy.
Okay, man.
Take it easy, man. All right. A lot of information there. A lot of information from Sanchez. I think we should have him on the show. Man. So look, here's before we go away tonight, I just want to make sure that I understand something, is that today in the news, I think there were a couple of really good examples of the Rovian divide and conquer / blame dispersal strategy in play. I mean, I am absolutely convinced right now that the fake Christian ex-blow monkey puppet of the Cheney regime's neocon death cult, George Bush, is absolutely no retard, but he seems to think that we are all retards. And I use that word because I've freed the word retard. I know people judge me for that, but I'm freeing it. All right. I'm not talking of making fun of mentally challenged people. I'm using it in the way that it was supposed to be used, as a slang. Now, we have some proof that about 31% of the American public are categorically retarded. I believe that. Okay. Because the bottom line is that they are not retarded in a mental sense, but culturally, politically, and possibly they are religiously retarded. For Bush to get in front of the American people today with a straight face and say this stuff.
To prevent these different groups from coming together to challenge his regime.
It's about Iraq.
Saddam Hussein undertook a deliberate strategy of maintaining control by dividing the Iraqi people.
He's blaming Saddam Hussein for the civil war in Iraq. Now, what a stretch that is. What does he think? How stupid does he think we are? This is like the Blaine Clinton strategy, that as opposed to take any responsibility at all, he is going to blame Saddam Hussein. Saddam's in jail. I couldn't even tell you how little people think about Saddam at all. As a historical figure, perhaps. And if he's going to blame Saddam, he's got to blame about three Republican administrations, including his father, for supporting this regime. And it just blows me away that, you know, there are tribal rivalries that are going on in Iraq right now that were kept in check by Saddam, but pre-existed even his reign there. But that's not the issue. The truth of the matter is, I think Saddam is not the issue, obviously. But to try to blame this hornet's nest of insurgents, jihadists, tribal rivalry, global terrorist training that Iraq is now on Saddam, and believe it, if anybody believes this, if this is the best that they have, I'm concerned for even the stupidest of people that would buy that bit of business. These guys refuse to be accountable. And if you believe that if you're going to let him blame Saddam Hussein for what we've escalated there, you yourself has the blood of about 2,325 dead Americans on your hands. I mean, let's be honest. Taking responsibility for your actions is an adult, honest, strong, courageous thing to do. What these guys would rather see hundreds, maybe thousands more people, you know, die than admit a mistake or take a humanitarian action. They feed on this chaos and they expect us to just atrophy and believe them. And I really think that this, along with the immigration issue, is I think that Bush has become the purveyor of extremism when it comes to Iraq. Yeah, I think he is enabling other Republicans to disagree with him as much as they want, and as long as he keeps the retarded loyalists in check and guarantees the delivery of their vote for any Republican that aligns himself even a little with George Bush. And I think it's the same with immigration. As long as the Republicans who are pandering to moderates can pick and choose what they align themselves with the president on, they have a chance at holding the Republican frame. But I can't, like today, on top of everything else, the Democrats come out, Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi actually said they have a strategy, they have a national security strategy, and they had a banner, so it's a start. They've made the sign.
They have a banner.
They have the banner. They stood in front of the banner. They said that they would rebuild the military and end the U.S. dependence on foreign oil. They said they would implement the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission. And the banner said real security. So as a photo op, Powerful. They got Wesley Clark to stand there. Madeleine Albright was there. I hope that the plan is real, because this is going to what this if Democrats cannot win these midterm elections on a national security frame, given everything else. I mean, everything else. Just the fact that Republicans are prolonging the war, the deficit spending, the corruption in the House. Abramoff was sentenced to 5.5 years today, and he might get less if he keeps singing. All right. The way they've trashed the Constitution, they've broken the law, the way they've compromised national security, the incompetence in response to Katrina, completely, you know, leaving their flank open to criticism of their ability to protect the nation at all.
So you really think the Democrats are that much far away from the Republicans in all those issues of corruption and
I think
bribery?
That if the bottom line is like, you know, if you want to think that way at this juncture, and say that they're all, you know, a bunch of whores, that may be the case. But even in terms of just acknowledging that the voice of a different form of legislation is out there, of people that are willing to start even raising the cultural dialogue against these greed monsters, I'm willing to settle for that. And I think if they can't even play on that level, then they are completely spineless, and it is an utter disappointment. So, you know, I understand what you're saying, but I think that if Democrats can't start beating these corrupt bastards, even if it's with their own corruption up and coming, if they can't do it now, then we've lost for I don't even know how many years. You want to play the guitar?
Sure.
Okay. What do we got?
Mark Maron's on at night. Jokes once told in empty halls. Or bouncing off the studio walls. I bet you think this next line ends in balls. Now I understand what you tried to say to me. How your backpack smells like your cat's pee. Because you would not let them free. Now the people stop and say, pee you. You're a big neurotic Jew.
All right.
Now his stream is always strong. Mark Maron.
These guys just lie, and they don't even have to lie. This guy, Howard Kaloogian, who's he's running for the Republican seat of Congress that Duke Cunningham was pushed out of for being a corrupt bastard. And apparently this guy, Kaloogian, put on his official campaign website a picture that he said he took in downtown Baghdad that indicated that the media was wrong about the level of violence in the city. And he said that the photo was he took it while he was there. And it was just a sort of a calm scene. But somebody on the blog in the blogosphere, a series of bloggers took him to task, did the research, found out that the picture was actually taken in Turkey. In a completely different country, and it was a completely mundane city scene, but they proved it, you know, on the blog, you know, in the blogosphere, and they showed the same corner that it was in Turkey, not in Baghdad. That guy didn't even have to do that yet. And the fact that they have no imagination, can't even think for themselves. All they're doing is running on these frames that are put forth by the Republican National Committee that the media is misrepresenting the war. And this guy goes out of his way to take a picture that he knows is not of Iraq, put it up there, which is a lie, to honor a frame that he didn't even think of. Not only are they liars and corrupt, but they're unimaginative. They got no imagination. They got no vision. There was no need for this guy to do it. They're pathological liars. Let's do this. A lot happened in the world today, and we want to make sure you're... Are they going to clean now?
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry.
All right. Can we... Let's just do the jokes.
Is that an auric? That's an auric.
That was awkward. And she comes in here. All right, look.
Man, that was cleaning the whole place out.
A lot happened in the world today, and we want to make sure you're caught up on current events before you go to bed. So here's tonight's edition of the Mark Maron Short Order News. Italy has granted asylum to the Afghan man who faced beheading for converting from Islam to Christianity. The Pope praised the man for having the courage to convert to a religion of hope from one based on hate and superstition. He then showed him his rare collection of Jesus bone chips. This morning, the world experienced its first solar eclipse in 3 years. This was a rare total solar eclipse, where the moon completely blocks out the sun. The only eclipse more rare is the shadow puppet eclipse, where the moon casts a shadow of the sun that looks like a bunny. Singer Tom Jones was knighted today at Buckingham Palace. When the ceremony was over, the Queen reportedly became so excited she had an assistant throw one of her chainmail panties at his face. That's got to hurt a little bit, the chainmail.
She's old. I bet it would, you know.
But she probably, even if she wasn't old, Jim, she'd have it in her collection. I mean, she's the Queen of England. They have all that stuff. The chainmail panties.
She got very excited. She had somebody throw it at his face.
And I think the joke is that she wouldn't do it herself because she's a queen.
Right.
And then the chainmail
itself.
That
was an addition to the joke. First you had the joke of chainmail panties.
And then you had the assistant.
Yes.
And she could have thrown one with a lock on it, too. They got all those weird panties.
Man, that's called constructing a joke and then wrapping it up.
And then killing it with what I added at the very end. Sort of like the way that the end of the show's going.
Bring the orc back.
Stick a knife in it, right? It's done, dude. It's done. And that's Mark Maron's short order news for tonight. Wow. Now if I could find my thing. Annabelle Gurwitch is going to be here tomorrow. She has written or compiled a book of stories from celebrities. It's all about being fired. And we got a guy called Hamill on Trial who's going to sing nasty songs about politics and fatherhood. He's actually pretty entertaining. I listened to his CD today. So Annabelle Gurwitch and Hamill on Trial tomorrow. Sleep tight, sheeple. It's been a pleasure. Jim, good night to you.
Nighty-night.
I don't know.